This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. You probably don't realize it, but Charlotte is home to some 2,000 Brazilians. Perhaps they live here because we're also home to six Brazilian firms, including two U.S. headquarters of Brazilian companies. As a result, we also have direct daily flights from Douglas International to Rio de Janeiro. So if you're planning a trip to the World Cup or the upcoming Olympics, you'll have an easy time getting there. Brazil's growing interconnectedness with Charlotte is also the reason for our guest today and his reason for being in the city. Mauro Vieira is the Brazilian ambassador to the United States, and he joins us for the hour. Good morning. Welcome to Charlotte.
Good morning, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
This is not the first time you've been here, evidently. You've been here, what, six other times before?
Yes, this is the fifth time I'm here. And I'm very glad to be here again today and the first time here with you in your program. I came twice for different meetings, but always on a special invitation of the World Affairs Council of Charlotte. And this, again, is the reason I'm here today. I'm addressing the Ambassador Series this during lunchtime today. And I also have the opportunity to come and meet with you.
That, by the way, is at the Charlotte City Club, and it's at noon, and there may or may not be tickets available for that. There are no tickets available? Okay, well, then we won't even tell you to go to our website to check because it's sold out. Having six Brazilian companies in a town may not be a big deal for some cities, such as New York or perhaps Washington, where your embassy is. But it is, it seems to me, for a city the size of Charlotte. Why so many Brazilian companies here?
Well, and this is also the reason I'm here. We want to reach out to different states in the United States. And North Carolina is a state with very special connections with Brazil, not only home to a relatively large number of Brazilians living here, companies, and also, as you mentioned before, the daily flights from Charlotte to Rio and São Paulo. This helps connecting Brazil and the two main cities in Brazil to Charlotte. And I must tell you that it's a very comfortable connection, and I've taken it many, many times. When I mentioned to you that this is my fifth time here, I'm not counting the connections I made to go to Rio and to go to different places in Brazil. So I feel myself as a frequent visitor to Charlotte. But I think that the state offers very good conditions for companies to come, to establish and to generate jobs and to invest. According to the information I have, Brazilian companies have generated or keep maintaining some 2,000 jobs in the state. So this is good. This is a big deal. And the total trade between North Carolina and Brazil is very high, too, is $1.7 billion. Which is a lot. This is almost 3% or 2.7% of the total trade between Brazil and the United States, which is very high.
What do the six companies, the six Brazilian firms that are located here, what do they do?
Well, they're in different sectors. One of them is in the textile industry. There is also in this steel plant, Gerdau, and there are also manufacturers of parts and spare parts to the automobile industry and consulting companies and a number of different activities and areas.
Brazil received 2.5% of the Carolinas' exports in 2009. I'm sure that number has changed since that time, but what kinds of things are you importing from the Carolinas?
Well, most products we have with the United States, most products exported by North Carolina. We have a very diverse trade with the United States in general. And the total trade between Brazil and the United States was last year $76 billion, which is a lot. Of course, it's not the first, it's not the second, but it's the eighth. Sometimes it changes between the seventh and the eighth largest trade partner of the United States. Of course, the NAFTA members, Canada and Mexico, and also China, They have bigger trade with the United States, but Brazil comes seventh or eighth. And it's so diverse. We buy and sell so many different things, from aircrafts to beef and poultry, and we import also parts for the automobile industry.
You buy our beef? I thought Brazil had its
own. We sell some. No, as a matter of fact, it's a different kind of beef. It's not fresh beef. It's canned beef, because fresh beef is not yet included in our bilateral trade. It's canned beef, and but we do export, yes, poultry and other kinds, and pork and others.
I don't know how long you've been how long have you been ambassador to the United States?
It will be 4 years in next January.
So it may maybe was that your first exposure to a long-term exposure to this country?
No, this is the second time. Okay. I am a career diplomat, and I started my career abroad many, many years ago in 78 in Washington as a third secretary at the embassy.
Because over the years I have found that people from other parts of the world seem to know a lot about us while we know nothing about them. So let's do a little history lesson. Let's go back in time a little bit here and talk about Brazil. Interestingly enough, we were the first country to recognize Brazil's independence.
That's right.
From Portugal in 1822. That's a long time ago. And we have the two largest democracies and the two largest economies in the Western Hemisphere. I didn't know that until yesterday. I knew you were big, but I didn't know how big you were. Your Independence Day, September 7th, 1822. What led you to your breaking away from Portugal? Do you remember?
Well, it's a long story. It's difficult to summarize it in 1 hour, but I'll try. I'll try to make it. Well, Brazil was a colony and discovered by Portugal in the 1500s. Mm-hmm. And we stayed like that for a very long, long time. In 1807, the Iberic Peninsula was invaded by Napoleon. And the King of Portugal moved to Brazil with his court. 11,000 people, they decided to leave Europe and establish in Rio de Janeiro, where the court stayed for 13 years. This made a big difference. All other South American countries became independent from the metropolis, from Spain, in 1810, and Brazil was the only one to stay another 12 years as a colony. But as a matter of fact, it was not a colony. We were raised to the status of United Kingdom of Portugal, Brazil, and Algarves. And so there was a lot of development and a lot of the demands of the local community and society for independence. They were postponed for a while because Rio de Janeiro became the capital of this large empire, which reached Africa, mm-hmm. many countries in Africa like Angola, Mozambique, and India like Goa, and China like Macau, and even East Timor, which was part of Indonesia for a time. So this is what led to a later independence from the metropolis than the other countries. But in 1822, Brazil was already a big country, a large country, a vast continental mass. And the regent, who was the son of the King of Portugal, declared independence. The United States became the first country to recognize the independence, and we immediately started having resident diplomats. It's a very, very long story. And even before Brazil was independent, the United States had a consulate in Rio de Janeiro in 1810, more or less. So you see, it's a very, very long lasting and very good relation.
You are the largest nation on the South American continent in terms of land mass and the world's fifth largest nation. And anybody who's ever seen a picture of Rio de Janeiro knows how spectacularly beautiful it is, the beaches there and the mountains, the rise with the I can't think of the name of the famous statue.
Yes, the Christ, the Redeemer.
Yes. And, of course, you have jungle. And you have, talk about the diversity of the country, geographically speaking.
Well, the country is very vast, as you said. We have, from the equator, part of the country is north of the equator. and the equator crosses more or less the height of the Amazon forest and the state of Amazon. And you go all the way to the south, very close to the river plate. So it's a very long stretch of land, and also from the Atlantic Ocean to very close to the Andes mountains. And you have all different kinds of climates, from snow in the south to very humid and hot and tropical weather in the Amazon forest, and very dry in the center of the country. And it's very diverse.
Yeah, you have a really interesting modern history, and you touched on it, dating from colonial times. But you also have an ancient history. Most of us, when we think about indigenous people and artifacts from indigenous populations that really date back way, way back, we think of the Aztecs. But in fact, you predate all of that. The earliest pottery ever found, I think, in the Western Hemisphere is carbon dated to 8,000 years ago, found in the Amazon basin of Brazil. Is your history with the indigenous people of that part of the world better than our history with our indigenous people, which is pretty miserable?
Well, it's difficult to judge. I don't want I'm not very familiar with your history with the indigenous.
Trust me. Miserable.
But what I can tell you is that, yes, of course, they were very numerous when the Portuguese came to Brazil. But the indigenous, of course, and there are reservations, there are lands that are reserved for the Indians in Brazil these days. They still are very numerous, but they are very assimilated by our civilization, by the Western civilization. And they are, of course, protected by the Constitution and very special laws. They have the right to keep their original land, their original territories in very different areas of the country, and it's huge what the portions of land that they own, that it's theirs and protected by the Constitution and the law. Some states in the north of Brazil, to the borderline with Venezuela and the Guyanas, maybe half of the territory of the state is indigenous land, Indian lands.
What's the population of Brazil?
Brazil has 200 million inhabitants.
And I know about Sao Paulo, and I know about Rio de Janeiro. I know there are other large cities, but there are 26 states.
Yes, 27, because okay. The capital is a large, it's not only like D.C., just a small portion, it's a much larger portion with a few cities in it. So they elect senators and members of the House, so it's 27 states.
So are most of the population congregated in the larger cities, or is it spread out across that vast
area? No, we are more, of course, the population is spread all over, but it's more of an urban population these days. It was a big change from the 19th to the 20th century when we started our industrialization, and the population moved to the cities, and that's why the cities are so big, but we still have a large part of the population in the fields.
And there have been big changes economically in Brazil in recent years, which I want to talk about when we come back. We have to take a break. Mr. Mauro Vieira, the Brazilian ambassador to the United States, is with us today, and we will continue in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Sedgefield Interior Landscape, specializing in interior plant design, installation, and continuous maintenance for businesses. Information available at sedgefieldinc.com. And the Beckler Museum of Modern Art, presenting Modernism in Changing Times, works from 1968, a chronological look at the museum's permanent collection, exploring abstraction, geometry, and more. Details at beckler.org. Well, for the next several weeks, Broadway runs amok on the stage of the Booth Playhouse. Forbidden Broadway, after having run for years in New York, has finally made its way to Charlotte, and it is a stitch and a half. They go after the shows, the people, the music, the lyrics. Everything is fair game for these people, and we'll talk to two of the performers and the producer tomorrow at 9 and find out about a new theater in an unlikely place. Wax on, that's all, tomorrow on Charlotte Talks.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Israel's prime minister lobbied strongly against proposals offered by Western diplomats over Iran's nuclear program. Disagreement between the U.S. and Israel over concessions from Iran and next steps in the diplomatic process.
Tune in the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is the Brazilian ambassador to the United States, Mauro Vieira, who is here under the auspices of the World Affairs Council of Charlotte. They're very nice to provide some fairly high-profile people to us from time to time. Brazil was late in coming to the governing structure that many of us in the Western world have had for a while. You've been through a lot of dictatorships in modern times, as well as military rule. How did you find your way to the form of government that you have today, which seems to be doing rather well?
Yes, well, we had from 64 to 85 a military dictatorship. And in 85, the society elected for the first time a president. We first elected the president according to the rules that were established by the previous military government, which was an indirect election by Congress. But the civil society and the forces, the political forces of the opposition, managed to gather, to put together and to build a consensus, and they defeated the military rule and the party, the political party that was in charge and that was controlling both houses, the Senate and the House. During this military period, which spanned over 20 to 21 years, the Congress was open, mm-hmm. although it was totally controlled by the government. But finally, we managed to get rid of this military government.
Oh, it seems to me that it's very difficult to do that.
Peacefully. Yes, no revolution.
Why would they give up power just because you said we don't want you anymore? Because so many military
dictatorships. In a way, yes, and I think that the society was tired of military rule and having general presidents who stayed in power for 5 years, and then they were elected under this fake system, right, of a Congress-controlled. People would elect members of the Congress, but the government would also appoint some members of Congress so that they would keep the majorities. That's why I call it a fake election. And finally, I think the society got tired of it, and the members of that who were legitimately elected were conscious of the situation. And finally, the movements and the negotiations within this political world resulted in a coalition that had the majority. Some of the members of the political party supporting the military government, they left this movement and joined the opposition forces, and there was a president mm-hmm. who was elected. And immediately after that was back in 1985, he was elected and he died before taking the oath of office. So his vice president took office and governed for 5 years. And during this period, we wrote a new constitution. There was an assembly, a national assembly, to write a new constitution, which is very modern and very open, very, of course, democratic. And this has been the guide of the society and the government since then.
This shift toward civilian government, properly elected civilian government, only happened in 1985. That was a really short time ago. And we watch around the world as countries try to move toward more democratic governments, and they have such difficulty doing it. And we did too. We don't remember that about ourselves, but we did. We had a tough time getting to where we are and still do. We just witness what's going on in Washington. How difficult was the transition?
Well, first of all, I want to go back a little while and let you know that Brazil became independent in 1822, mm-hmm. and it was an empire mm-hmm. until 1889. And it was very democratic. It was a constitutional monarchy with a prime minister who was the chief of government, and the emperor was the chief of state, and with different with elections, partial elections, but the government worked and in a very democratic way for that time, but after we had the republic in 1889, we also had a democratic government, and then two big coups d'etat in 1930 and 32, and we had a dictatorship, half civilian, half military, which was, in a way, was a very progressive one. And during this period, for instance, all social legislation concerning workers and the right of workers were voted and were approved. Mm. So it's been a period, the 20th century especially, a period of alternate different kinds of governments with dictatorships and, of course, also civilian and democratic governments.
Our guest today is Mauro Vieira, who is the Brazilian ambassador to the United States. During both dictatorship periods and the recent period of democratically elected government, Brazil has gone through a lot of economic crises, although today you are, I believe, the largest economy in South America and the seventh largest economy in the world. How did you fix things? Because economic crises are really difficult to get out of.
Yes, well, no doubt. But Brazil has a lot of resources, not only human resources, but also physical resources. We have huge rivers and a lot of water, and we do have mineral resources, and we have oil, we have gas, we have all this. And, of course, we have a very vibrant society, and we started making our homework and arranging the legislation and with a lot of incentives to business. And Brazil grew a lot, especially after 85. If you compare the number, it's surprising to see how big we are now compared to what we were before and how fast we grew.
When you have natural resources, and we're certainly I'm trying to think of the word. I'm having trouble with the words today. I'm sorry. We're not the exception to the rule. But when you have natural resources, the temptation is to rape and pillage and to let money rule. And there's great concern over the what's happening to the Brazilian rainforest because of what it may or may not be doing to the climate and to the world's environment. Are there restrictions that are exercised in Brazil over what happens to that rainforest?
Oh, of course. It's totally protected. Brazil is a champion in environment protection, in climate change policies, and we are far ahead of many developed countries, for instance, in climate changes and carbon emissions. We have very strict unilateral mm-hmm. legislation in Brazil. And, of course, there is a big control. Brazil, since 1988 or 89, we do have a ministry, a department to take care of the environment, and it's very strict. They have an institution, an agency that is in charge of giving license to any kind of project, even if you want to build hydroelectric high dam very far from the Amazon, you need the license given by the equivalent to the Environment Protection Agency here in the United States, EPA. So it's a very strict legislation, no doubt. And, of course, also the natural resources, underground natural resources, like all minerals from gold to whatever, or oil or gas or anything. It's the property of the state. It's not the property of the owner of the land. And it's strictly regulated by the government. And there are concessions to explore in partnership with the government or directly. Private exploration, but everything is very controlled.
You have a female president.
Yes.
In Brazil, and that makes her among the most powerful women in the world. I'm just curious, since we've never had one, and there are some people thinking that Hillary Clinton might run yet again for president. Was her gender at all a topic of conversation prior to her election?
No, I don't think so.
Is it now?
No, well, it's not an easy thing to elect for the first time a woman to the highest post. But I don't think that was an issue, because she was a minister and a very powerful, very influential minister under the government of our former president, President Lula. She was first minister of energy, mines and energy. And she was, 3 or 4 years later, she was appointed chief of cabinet to the president. She had this, she was the minister who would coordinate the work of all other ministers. So it's a very important, a very top position. And she's a very forceful woman. She's very active. She controls everything in this position. She was aware. She was in control of everything. She's very hands-on, and she has this executive attitude. And she was very well received.
We're talking about Dilma. Is it Dilma Rousseff?
Dilma Rousseff, her name, yeah.
Who is the president of Brazil. But I want to get back to this. There was no conversation during the run-up to the elections about her gender, that could a woman do this job? None of that was going on, is what you're telling me.
No, I don't think gender was a question, because half, a little over 50% of the Brazilian population are women. So it was seen as natural. Of course, it was the first time, but we have had prior to that governors of state women and senators and members of the House and ministers. So it was more than natural, and it was not an issue. Nobody voted for her, or nobody voted for the opposition, because she was a woman and the other was a man, and the other candidates were men.
As an indication of the growing importance of Brazil, when President Obama took his Latin American and South American tour, Brazil was the longest stop on the tour. And your president was to have come here to spend time with our president in Washington and canceled that because of the revelations around the NSA's spying activities. We're spying on lots of people, among them the president, the president of Brazil. Why was that such a contentious issue? It's hard for us to understand sometimes the impact that we have on the rest of the world. What was the reaction by Brazilians to the revelations that we are spying on you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to talk about two specific points that you mentioned. President Rousseff came here in April last year. She was invited by President Obama for an official visit, a working visit, and it was very successful. She was in Washington. She spent almost a day and a half in Washington, and then she spent a full day in Boston, where she visited Harvard and MIT and the governor, Governor Deval Patrick. And it was a very, very good and very productive visit. And this was a second meeting of both presidents, because President Obama, as you said, visited Brazil in March 2011. Secondly, she didn't cancel her visit. The visit was postponed.
Spoken like a true diplomat.
No, it's not like a. It's speaking the truth, because both presidents, they had a lot of contacts, telephone calls, and they met on the margins of the G20 meeting in Russia in St. Petersburg, and they came to the conclusion that the best thing at that moment, I'm talking of late September. The best decision was to postpone the visit. The visit, the invitation is good, is valid. She will come in the future, next year. We don't have a fixed date, but they both heads of states decided to postpone to a better period, because coming and the visit would have taken place on October 22nd to 24th. they would be kidnapped both by the news.
Right.
And they could sign the best agreements and make the best deals and push the relations even further. And we have excellent relations as of now. But nothing would come out of that. And the press, especially in Brazil, would only speak of the NSA.
And what was the reaction by the press and by the people of Brazil?
Well, different reactions. First, surprise and some indignation with the news that the president herself was a spy, and the oil company Petrobras and the Minister of Mines and Energy, and surprise, and we were astonished with this news. Of course, we know that spying is almost a natural activity to many countries, and we have all this romantic image of James Bond and all that, but that was very different, recording calls and so on. And, of course, it was an impact. It could generate an impact in the public opinion, as you can imagine. But it was taken very naturally by the government, and it was the decision to postpone, of course, was an issue that was discussed in many occasions. But I think that the general opinion is that was the best decision, and maybe the only decision to take at that point was to postpone for a while wait for a better moment.
It also impacted us in terms of money. I know of one instance where your president deferred until after the 2015 election, a decision that would have led to Chicago-based Boeing getting a $4 billion deal to supply Brazil with 36 FX-2 fighter jets. I guess that may be coming down the road, but that's a delayed amount of money coming into the country. That's just one example. I have to ask, does Brazil spy on other nations?
No, we do something very different. Of course, we do have an intelligence agency, but we collect intelligence within our borders, and of course in issues of security and terrorism and drug trafficking and all this. But we know that many countries do, and we do not have the means to spy, of course, as many other Western countries do. But as to the question you mentioned of the fighters that are under consideration, this is a project that was started many years ago to renew the fleet of fighters of the Brazilian Air Force, and there are three big companies that are in. They are making offerings to the Brazilian government, and the decision will be taken some time ahead of time. It's not. It was postponed also, this decision, because of the economic crisis in the world and so on.
Okay. The ambassador to the United States from Brazil is our guest today, Mauro Vieira, and we will continue our conversation in just a moment with some interesting information about voting practices there, which I find to be fascinating. And we'll also, we must talk about the World Cup and the Olympics. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and call experts. Answering Service and Call Center, now in Charlotte, handling offices, telephone answering needs, accountability, and customer service. Details at callexperts.com. And the Carolina Pottery Festival, featuring over 100 potters from the Carolinas and other regions, Saturday, 10 to 4, at the LeGrand Center in Shelby, North Carolina. Information at carolinapotteryfestival.org. Israel's Prime Minister lobbied hard against proposals offered by Western diplomats over Iran's nuclear program. Disagreement between the United States and Israel over concessions from Iran and the next steps in the diplomatic process will be the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. Perhaps you have questions about Brazil. Perhaps you want to go to the World Cup. Well, you can get in touch with us at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks, and we're coming right back.
As mid-November draws light from the sky, what better way to brighten things up than with a live performance of Says You? On Saturday, November 16th and Sunday, November 17th, we're coming to the Pease Auditorium in Charlotte for two shows. Tickets, information, and details are available on our website at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. So remember, that's November 16th and 17th, a mid-semester break with Says You.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mr. Mauro Vieira is with us. He is the Brazilian ambassador to the United States. Here's something interesting. We just had an off-year election in this city, and the race for president is about to begin again. Voting in your country is compulsory for people between literate people between 18 and 70, and optional for illiterates and those between 16 and 18 or beyond 70. Compulsory. Why?
Yes, well, this has been the model for forever, and we are used to it. I like it. I think it's important to take part in...
Well, we've had this discussion on this program about whether people should vote in this country or be forced to vote in this country, because it should be your civic and patriotic duty to vote, because you get the government that you deserve. But there are a lot of people out there, the argument has been made that there are a lot of people out there in this country who don't follow politics. They have no idea who their representative is in Congress and don't really care. So do you really want them voting? And there must be people like that in Brazil who don't follow it, don't really care. Do you want them in the ballot box?
But do these people criticize the government?
Of course they do.
They shouldn't. They don't. But, they do not take part.
So do you find then that compulsory voting increases interest? Do people more carefully follow politics and what's going on in their government if they have to go into the voting booth?
Yes, I think so. And it's also a process of education. We had, for not long ago, a period in which we did not vote for president from 64 to 85. And I think it's very good. Young people, I had never voted myself to president since I became of age until 1988 or 89, when was the first direct election. And I was 20-something years of age. I think it's very important to exercise your right, and I think that you have more right to participate and to complain and to criticize if you take a part, if you say, no, I want this government or the other, I want this party or the other. And I must tell you that we have a different system from the United States. We have a number of different parties. We have many parties, 20-something or 30 parties. And here you only have two. And we have, when it comes a presidential election, you may have 10 different candidates, although, of course, only three or four are serious in the sense of being having a chance to get a real important portion of the votes and going to the runoff, because we have a voting system in two sessions. You vote if none of the candidates get 50% plus one vote of the total voters, you have a runoff 30 days later.
Hmm. You let 16-year-olds vote.
Pardon?
You let 16-year-old people vote.
Yes. This is voluntary from 16 to 18. From 18 to 70, it's mandatory. It's compulsory.
What's the penalty for not voting?
Well, it's not a big penalty. You pay a fine, which is insignificant. I don't know how much is in money. When you need some documents, when you need a new passport, or if you're going to run for an election in the county, in the city county or so on, you're not able. If you join in the university and if you are over 18, you have to prove that you voted the last election. And if you are a public servant, you have to vote because you want to get your pay and so on.
You do not have a parliamentary system of government.
No,
you have
it's
a
not
presidential
Presidential
just
system.
Like ours.
Yeah.
Three branches of government.
Three branches, House and Senate.
They're elected by the population. The
direct vote.
The judicial branch is not elected.
No.
But you have this presidential system and 20 parties. Under a parliamentary system, I can understand how that works, but I don't understand how that works under a presidential system. How does the legislature function with 20 different political factions?
Well, you have to build coalitions, and if none of the parts the parties has a majority, a total majority of 50%, they will need the support of other parties. And, for instance, now we have the president's party is the Workers' Party, the PT, Partido Trabalhista. And Partido dos Trabalhadores, and there is a coalition with other, the Socialist Party, and with many other parties. It's a coalition of 6 or 8 parties with the same social orientation, and they run the government because they have the majority in both houses, and they can run the government.
We must now talk about the most important thing in the world to some people, and that is the World Cup. And we have a note on Facebook from Melina, who wants to know the most important question of the hour. What is the best way to travel to Brazil for the World Cup, and do I need a visa?
Yes, of course you need a visa if you are an American citizen, if you do not have another passport, because if you have an European passport, you do not need the visa. Or if you have a South American passport, you do not need a visa. But U.S. citizens with a U.S. Passport, you need a visa. And I must tell you why you need a visa, because it's on reciprocity. We do need visas to come to the United States. This is the reason, and the only reason. And, well, the best way, if you live in Charlotte, the best way is to take the nonstop flight either to Rio or to São Paulo. It's very comfortable, only 8 hours. And, well, the World Cup will take place from mid-June to mid-July. It will be a big event in Brazil. Brazilians are crazy about soccer.
Yeah, you call it soccer. Why do you call, everybody else in the world except us calls it football. Why do you call it soccer?
No, it's called soccer. It's called, in Portuguese, it's called futebol.
Okay.
But in Europe, it's called also soccer. And I think it's to make a difference, establish the difference between soccer and American football, which is not the same, or rugby, which is similar.
Right.
I think this is the... But this is not the only big event. We'll have 2 years later, in 2016, the Olympics. The Olympic Games will take place in Rio. This is going to be also a huge event. Mm-hmm. And the city is getting ready for it.
And the news reports that we're getting in this on this part of the hemisphere about getting ready for both the World Cup and the Olympics is that it's causing disruptions. These things happen all over the world when big games come in, particularly the Olympics, because all these new venues are built and people get displaced by that. And there have been reports of unrest, even some violence connected to preparations for those events. Is this a rough patch that you're beyond, or is this something that has the potential to continue or increase over time?
Well, there were protests in the month of June, and this was exactly at the moment of the Confederations Cup, which took place in Brazil. We won. The population was very happy. But there were a lot of demonstrations, especially in Rio and São Paulo, and it spread to some other cities. This is the result, and it was a very peaceful demonstration, of course, with some acts of violence, but they were opportunists who tried to provoke and to provoke the violence, but that was taken care of by the police forces. The protests, which were big, they were not against the World Cup or against Confederations Cup. It was a protest. It all started with a bus fare raise of a few percentage points, less than 1% or something like that. And it's the expression of a society that wants more public services, more infrastructure, more health care, more schools. And this is a result of the growth of the big, important, not only social development, but economic growth that took place in Brazil in the last year. So the more you have, of course, you... When you get more, when you leave poverty, when you're in the middle class, you want at least a middle class service. And that was the main reason for these.
Coming out of the economic crisis that you've experienced, you have created a large and growing middle class. And as you say, they want more services. I know that the train system in Brazil was languished because you decided to build highways, exactly what we decided to do in this country. After the Second World War, we did not expand trains, we built highways. And so public transportation is difficult in some places. And some of these protests, yes, they were over a rise in bus fares, as you point out, but it was also a question of why are we putting all this money into these entertainment venues for the World Cup and the Olympics when there are people who are desperately poor. How does any society, how do your government justify that?
Well, of course, the government pays a lot of attention to those who are still in poverty. And we have a very reduced number today in proportion to what we had in the past. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you still have just one person under the poverty line, you have to take care of this person. But the majority of the population of Brazil, over 100 million, 105 million, they are now in the middle classes. And there was a big economic growth. Some 51, 52 million people moved from different classes during the last 10 years. And the economy grew so much. Just to give you an example, in 2000, the Brazilian, the U.S. economy was 14 times the Brazilian economy. In 2012, the U.S. economy was 6.7 times the Brazilian economy. And this doesn't mean that the U.S. economy went down. It was $10 trillion, and in 2012, it was $15 trillion. And the Brazilian GDP was $600 billion, and it was $2.5 trillion mm-hmm. last year. So it's a big growth, and to give you an idea of the compared to the world economy, in the year 2000, Brazil was 1.1% of the world economy. In 2012, mm-hmm. it was 3.5%. So it's a huge change, and of course it generated a lot of wealth, and many people had better conditions of life, and of course they demand more.
Yeah,
which is more than natural.
Talk briefly about these favelas that are so present in Rio de Janeiro, because one of the things that our news media reports on, as you're building these fabulous places for the Olympics, is that there are people living on the hillsides in desperate conditions, and Brazil is either trying to move them or hide them in some way. How did they slip through the social safety net over there?
Well, first of all, I think that building stadiums and venues for the sports, it's investment, because this generate, of course, jobs, this generate taxes, and of course, they are multi-use venues. They will be used as schools, their physical education schools later on. So it's not wasted money or just for a show. And, well, secondly, when you mentioned the favelas, there is also an image of foreigners, especially here in the United States and in Europe, they still have a vision of the favela of extreme poverty. Of course, there are places with extreme poverty, but many of these places, they have developed into sectors, new quarters. Of course, they are not built with the best urbanistic models, but you have schools, you have a lot of things. Because a lot of people who moved to the middle class and were living in favelas, and they are not only in Rio, they're all over the country. Right. They're middle class people living in favelas. They have banks, they have schools, they have a lot of different things. Of course, I'm not trying to tell you that it's perfect, that it looks great and perfect, but it's not. And there are a lot of programs to, of course, also fight violence, which, and of course, that is goes together with poverty and so on.
But will the presence, once the Olympics come and go, once the World Cup comes and goes, and all these jobs have been created to build these venues, and the tourist economy is boosted by the presence of these events, will it pay off for Brazil and for the people of Brazil and the people living in these favelas? Will it pay off for them?
Well, I think so, because the investment and the benefits, they will last for a long, long time. And I think that the very important thing, which is a priority for the government, is education. And the president has launched a program, a very important program I would like to mention in a few minutes. If we have just 1 minute, I'll try to do it in 1 minute. But I think that the games, the World Cup and the Olympics, they generate a lot of dynamic movement towards education, and the president is very concerned with this. This is a top priority, education in Brazil, and sending undergraduates and graduate students abroad to a very important program called Science Without Borders. The government will be paying for 100,000 Brazilian students abroad, and maybe half of this to the United States. In the coming, during her first mandate, which ends next year.
I want to make sure that people understand how important soccer is to your country. Yours is the only country in the world to have played in every World Cup since 1930. You hold 5 titles. You're hosting the World Cup in 2014. It marks the second time you've hosted the World Cup. This is more important to you than the Olympics, isn't it? Let's be honest here.
Yes, of course. No doubt, but no doubt. It's very serious if we lose, and it's not serious if we win one extra gold medal or one last gold medal. It's just for it's important to be in competition, but it does not mean that we'll be very sad if we don't win more gold medals.
His Excellency Mauro Vieira, the Brazilian ambassador to the United States, thank you for the hour.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.